Hey Helen, great to see you.
Yeah, so lovely to finally be able to connect.
Yeah, and you're in London.
I am in rainy London town.
Rainy London. Yeah, I've got the sun blasting my face here, so yeah, it's sunset time here. I mean, the weather's been pretty it's been raining a lot. It's kind of rainy season now, but it's been beautiful today, so yeah, blessed to be in Bali. So Helen then, so you're making sneakers from waste, which is amazing, and you've been doing this for quite a number of years now. And I think the work you're doing is really vital on a number of levels. I mean, first and foremost, it just looks incredible. I think in terms of as a well-designed sneaker, I think it stands up to anything else that's going, on out there. And the fact that, you're using waste materials, the craft element, it's pretty amazing what you're doing. And in today's world, mass consumerism, this sort of current linear system that we're in, clearly we need a huge rethink. Things just aren't working. And I believe your work is sort of giving us a glimpse into the future, whether it's from the craft end, but also kind of very relevant in today's sort of cultural landscape in terms of the aesthetic as well. So just talk us through your process then in terms of how you're making this and maybe where you kind of started.
Yeah, so thanks so much. I think it's kind of a number of things. So I sort of started this idea when I did my MA collection at the Royal College of Art. And when I was there, before that, I studied traditional footwear. And then when I was at RCA, I really wanted to go into sneakers because it was something I didn't know how to make. And I was just interested to find out how they were made. So I started sort of trying to get people's shoes to take apart, people's sneakers, and I was asking my boyfriend, oh, can I take your Air Maxes apart or whatever? And he wouldn't give them to me. And a lot of people, I realized people had this sort of attachment to sneakers that they don't maybe have to other items of clothing. And people, even when they're completely battered and worn, people still loved them and they wanted to keep them and cherish them. So that was sort of one of the first angles where I started to think, okay, there's something more to these products, especially worn products, than just, to be thrown away and that's the end of that. So that was sort of the start in looking into worn and secondhand materials. So even though I've always been very environmentally conscious, I didn't actually approach the idea through the lens of wanting to reduce waste. I came through a much more story-led sort of perspective and started to really think about that and people's journeys and how sneakers, like, they interact with people and all that sort of thing. And then I, because no one would give me their sneakers to cut up, I went to a recycling centre in London called Trade, which I still work with now, and sort of just said, oh, do you have any old sneakers? Because I want to cut them up, I want to see how they're made. And they just had so many. And I just was completely surprised. I'd never really seen a recycling facility in use before. And just the amount of donations that they got, but also the scale of the operation was just immense. And they had basically these odd sneaker or odd shoe bins, and they're just these ginormous bins that when they're sorting the stuff to see if they can resell or reuse or donate or all these different things, they just have this massive conveyor belt and everything's just going basically. So they're very quickly thinking like, oh, that's a pair, we'll use that, we won't use that. So if anything is odd, they just chuck it behind them and it goes into this odd shoe bin, basically. And that can be sometimes people that donate their shoes don't even, they might donate them as a pair, but obviously when you're donating things into such a big, vast vat of stuff, they can get separated. So I always try and encourage people to tie the laces together or like secure them in a way so you can see that like this is definitely a pair. So anyway, then they were like, yeah, we have all this. So I was like, great, I'll use that. And yeah, I go there and I essentially sort through these massive bags and take just a tiny percentage of what they have, because I'm looking for quite specific things. So sort of get the bits that I want, and then I take those as my raw materials. So that's sort of how everything started, I guess. And then what was the other thing? Oh yeah, and also in terms of design, I think So I kind of started from that process, and then it was really the material that narrates the design. So it was always, thinking about the pieces. I was deconstructing all the pieces, looking at the pieces, and then using those as the direction for the design. So I think that's why when you see my work, it one doesn't look like anything else that really exists, because it's not, I'm not copying anything, or it's not like I'm not even inspired by anything that exists. I'm inspired by what's in front of me and the material. So that always allows me to create these really natural sort of organic patterns. It's sort of like building a collage, really. I'm just sort of collaging all these materials onto this shoe. And so that sort of helps to separate it as well, I think, from what other people are doing, which is nice.
Yeah, you can really see that in your designs. It feels very honest, and it hasn't got that sort of try hard element of like, oh, I'm trying to do something really deconstructed and crazy. It just feels very natural, and it's a very hard thing to do. And a friend of mine, Ern Chen, who I know you made his manifesto sneaker, the brand is called Salvagers. When he showed me those at first, I was like, what? How did you do that? And then I found out you were the one that made them, and I'd seen you on Instagram, and I was like, wow, this girl is really talented. And I was like, I've been watching you since then. And somebody that's really interested in sustainable design, I just think it's so powerful what you're doing, and it's so relevant to what people actually want to wear first and foremost because of the design. And by default, it's doing good for the environment. But it's crazy to hear that all of these sneakers are ending up in this place. And how are they collecting them then? Is there a specific company that collects them, or do they work with? Yeah, how are they going around collecting these waste sneakers? Where are they getting them from?
So this company that I'm working with, Trade, it's actually a charity. It's a sort of fashion-based charity. So all their campaigns go to help sort of like garment workers and things like that. So it's all based in fashion, which is why I like working with them. But they have bins all around London and around the UK. So they have like donation bins, and then people can donate their clothes in there. And then they have also a network of stores, trade like charity shops. So their main goal is to try and take the donations and resell them in their charity shops. But then they also have, other angles where they maybe take the clothes that they wouldn't sell in the charity shops, and they have like other levels of where those go to. But then, yeah, the single ones are just sort of left. There's actually a company that they work with that they send the shoe. I can't remember where it is now in the world, but they send the shoes, the single shoes, and there's actually a warehouse, and they try and repair shoes from all around the world.
Wow.
And I just, when they told me that, I was like, please, can I go? Like, how could I go there? That just sounds like an epic scale. But yeah, so that's what they do with those single shoes. But then I take such a small percentage. I maybe take like 50 shoes every 3 months or 6 months or something. So it's, when I'm there, they have these ginormous vats, and I'm literally picking out a few shoes that I want. And it feels like I'm doing something useful, but really the scale of what I'm actually producing is small, but what I'm trying to do is sort of spread that message, which is on a bigger scale, I guess.
Absolutely, and I think that's creating the impact. It's that sort of message, and through today's technology of social medias, it's spreading pretty fast. So it's as I mentioned, it's incredibly vital and important, the work you're doing. And I guess when people are recycling this, like when you look at sneakers, it's made from so many different materials, right? It's not just one or two materials. I don't know how many. I mean, you could probably tell me better, but it seems that's the issue with recycling, is the fact that we've just muddled all of these different materials together that shouldn't really go together. So it just makes it completely non-recyclable.
Yeah, exactly. They do have so many materials in it. And then they also, I think the thing with sneakers is they kind of, there was a stage, not so much now, and I think partly because of sort of the trend of deconstruction that's come out of this sort of movement, which is another topic. But I think the sneakers back when I was d started this in, 2015, 2016, they sort of appear on the shelf so shiny and white and like crisp, and they're so devoid of making. And I think that because I come from a traditional footwear background where, you really know the craft of the making, and there's these British English shoemaking factories that are making these beautiful shoes, and then when you when they come to like the end of life, you can resole them, and you can resole them up to 3 times. I used to work in a shoe shop for a brand called Jeffrey West, and we used to do resoles all the time. And I think that background for me really made me connect with that idea of like keeping the longevity of a shoe specifically. And then when I looked at sneakers, I was like, they're just, you forget that they're made by humans. And I think it's a question that I get a lot with my shoes. People are like, oh, so they're handmade. Like, do you make them? And every sneaker you own is handmade and made by someone. It's just that because it's so polished, you've forgotten about the process of making. And so one of the angles of my work that I really wanted to try and get across was this idea of really exaggerating and showing the process of making. So you can see, oh, those are all the different materials. Those are the stitch lines. There you can see, I don't know, the label from the inside of a shoe. You can see the foam, you can see the padding, you can see the heel stiffener. So all these materials that usually are completely hidden, I started to expose to really show people all the work that goes into sneakers. But then obviously it comes with that, then you can see the amount of materials that goes into them as well. But it's something now that there's a lot more availability for replacing those components with either more sustainably produced components or starting to simplify everything so you can have all one material, which I know, you know, like there's a couple of brands now that are doing those like one material uppers. So yeah, there is solutions, but it's I think there's still a long way to go.
Yeah, it seems to be. And the brands that I'm seeing who are doing things, I mean, even now the big players, the Nikes, the Adidas, they're doing the odd shoe, whether it's the Future Loop, which is made from one material, and we're seeing Nike doing the Space Hippie, but it's so much in its infancy. And I think these brands are working out, how are we going to scale this? How is this profitable? All these different questions. But I guess at least they're thinking about it. I guess that's a good start. But you're right. When you do think about sneakers, you think of huge factories, big machines, everything just made in these vast sort of vortexes of computerized machines, and not someone physically there with a sewing machine. Whereas with shoes, you feel, you know, that leather, you know, making like the craft of making shoes, you still kind of feel like somebody's made that. So, and that hasn't been translated into sneakers. But when I look at your work, clearly you can see that is made by hand. And that's definitely a really cool component about what you're doing. But it's funny because when we're talking about recycling and this notion of sort of repairing, I mean, I remember growing up in Newcastle, you know, in the late 80s, early 90s, and I've got really good memories of going to the cobblers, like with my mum or my auntie. I always remember everybody back then who always used to get their shoes repaired. And I don't know if that happens anymore. It probably doesn't seem to be. I think there's a lot to be said in that. And I wonder, because kind of these shoes generally are made from leather, or these sole units are made from leather and they're getting repaired or whatever, like with what you're doing, do you feel there's something which people could almost look at doing in their own lives, and looking at their cupboards and saying, okay, I've got, you know, some people have probably got hundreds of pairs of sneakers, some people might have 15 pairs of sneakers or whatever, but that's enough to last you a lifetime. And you could essentially create a new pair of sneakers by reworking what you already have, and it would last you forever. Do you think that's where things are going to head? And how do you see what you're doing becoming a bit of a sort of open source type of thing, where people could learn from you, they could set up their own little sort of industries in their own communities and do this for people within their neighborhoods or something? Do you feel that's where things are going to head to?
Yeah, I think there's definitely an element of that. There's a few sort of things that are already, I guess, in play a little bit. But I think one of the most things that I find the most amazing is that idea of when people take that ownership into their own hands. So like I said, you know, my sneakers, they're made to order, they're bespoke, you know, they're quite, they're not very accessible to a lot of people. But what is accessible is that idea. And I think that when I get DMs from students or from not even students, you know, just from anybody that's inspired by what I've done, and that's inspired them to increase the longevity of their own products. So maybe they thought, oh yeah, I was going to throw these away, but then I painted on them, or then I changed the laces, or I cut a bit off, or I stuck a bit on, and they've kind of been inspired by that mindset of taking some ownership of your products, and also by seeing the value in your products that are a bit more worn. Because I mean, there's such a massive trend with vintage and secondhand in so many other aspects, and I think in shoes sometimes that doesn't really translate, but obviously vintage sneakers is a massive industry as well. And I think that for people to sort of see their own journey and their own sort of human agency on the products as the beauty of it is really important. And I think that's sort of a few, you know, some of my audience are sort of changing their mindset in that way, which is really nice. And then also I do workshops and things like that. So I try and teach this sort of design thinking in the hope that it will spread, because I think, like you said, it should be the future. And I think that idea of repairing, we've sort of forgotten, because everything just suddenly, you know, got so mass produced and mainstream that we didn't need to repair anything anymore, because we could just get it was, you know, cheaper to buy another pair than to get it repaired. So, you know, that idea of repair and the cobblers are sort of a bit of a dying art. But I do know there's a local cobbler who I go and visit sometimes in Hackney Central, and he does repair sneakers. So he started to, and I think a few of the cobblers, I guess, are starting to think about that. But he sort of patches them if people have a hole in the toe or things like that. So I think it's nice that those sort of very traditionalist makers are starting to see the importance of this industry as well. Which is really cool. But yeah, I think that that idea of repair is something we need to remember a bit more. And I also think, in a way, because of everything that's happened this year, it is starting to pop up on people's mind again. People, I think, have had a year to sort of reset a little bit and think, I'm buying too much, or I don't need all these clothes, or, you know, even just of pure practicality, you couldn't get to the shops and buy anything new. So if you needed to, you know, if you had like a hole in your jacket or something, then you would have to fix it. So it went a little bit old school this year, which I quite appreciate.
Yeah, for sure. It definitely gave us a much needed pause and time to reflect on things. And, you know, this sort of like this mass consumerism of constantly like buying stuff and, you know, having stuff that we just forget about, don't even unpack, and then buy something else. It just got a little bit out of hand. And I think when everybody thought, okay, things are going to get tight, let's not eat out as much, let's not buy so much stuff, and you actually go, oh, actually, I'm not missing this, and I'm saving money, and, you know, you've got more time to do other things. So I think this year's definitely given us that chance to rethink and also reimagine how the future could look, and looking at ways that we can do things better and all these sort of things. But yeah, that notion of taking it sort of like sort of global yet local type of thing. Do you know Precious Plastic, the guys who are recycling plastic? It's a guy called Dave Hackins who set up, and essentially what they did was they created sort of small machines that anybody could sort of make, and you could sort of recycle plastic within your community. And he just essentially, it was called Precious Plastic, and he put it online. And once he did that, it's created, I think he's now into the thousands of people around the world who have all started making these machines in order to recycle plastic, and it's really taken off. And I see like what you're doing is something kind of, it could sort of follow in that way, where you sort of set up the blueprint of saying, okay, this is how you can collect, this is how you make, this is the process, this is what you need. And then you could sort of put that online, and I'm pretty sure like it would just spread. And there's a sort of map on his website, and you can see all of the different dots around the world of people who are doing it. And it's, I mean, there's several people who are doing it now in Bali. I mean, we did it a couple of years back at Potato Head, the place I've been working for the past 6 years. Like, we set up a lab, we were recycling plastic and also food waste, and we set up the machines. And since then, I think there's around seven or eight people who have done it just in Bali. So it's created a movement, and it's making people see the value in plastic again, so not the value in plastic, the plastic in waste. So that rather than just throwing the single use plastic away, they're recycling it and rethinking, okay, maybe I don't need to buy so much stuff. And there's so many people who have sneakers that could probably do something different with, or yeah, I think it's a good way of doing it. But have you done anything with flip-flops by any chance? Because it's a big problem here in Bali, like a huge problem. Like every rainy season, you go down to the beach and there's literally thousands of flip-flops on the beach. And we did a big art installation called 5,000 Lost Souls, and we built like an art installation that sort of led you into the beach club here. And it was literally 5,000 flip-flops that we found on the beach and made it into a sculpture. And the amount of people that engaged with that installation were like, wow, this is incredible. It's such a big problem that people don't think about. And I guess it's the same with sneakers. I mean, there are people who's recycling, but how many are in landfill? Like, there'll be, millions, pairs in landfill. So it's definitely a good way of opening people's eyes to, like, thinking about where things are heading to and seeing the value, or like rethinking what waste means. Like, waste isn't something you just throw away. It's a surplus material that if you're creative, like what you're doing, you could do something incredible with them, So I think, yeah, looking at ways that you could expand what you're doing to like communities all around the world could be very powerful, if something that you've thought about doing.
Definitely. I would love to come over and do something with all those flip-flops. I think it's so true. And I think especially with flip-flops, I mean, there's something about the ocean that I think the ocean plastic and like the pollution in the sea is the one thing that moves me more than anything else. It's like the thing that I feel like that is my calling, to do something about that. And I think flip-flops, it's such a massive problem, because the thing is, the EVA that the flip-flops are made out of is such a sort of a strong material that it's a very useful material, but it's made for the purpose not to degrade or not to lose its value of its property. So even flip-flops that have been swimming around in the sea for years, you probably found like those flip-flops that you gathered were pretty much in working order, just without maybe the thong bit at the top, or the holes have got too big, or they've pinged out. But I'm sure with those EVA soles, we could just make some more, make new ones.
Yeah, it's funny because everybody, obviously being in the climate such as Bali, everybody wears flip-flops. And the main issue is things get lost and then discarded into the rivers. And then it just flourishes down the river, and just that's it. It's out there forever. And I'm talking, if you can go down to the beach and look where the river mouth is, there's thousands upon thousands of pairs. Like, you can collect with a small group of people 2,000-3,000 pairs in 1 hour. It's pretty sad. It's devastating, really. And there's a woman here called Lena Klaus, who's an artist who goes and collects them all and does art installations. And she was the one who we connected with. And I actually thought about you at the time. I was saying, you would do something really great with these that people would actually rewear. With your sort of imagination and creativity, it could be a pretty good project. So maybe I can send you some, and you can inspire a movement in Bali of what people can do with their flip-flops again. Because they break, and once they break, you can't wear them again. People just throw them. They break so easily, especially the thong ones. The thongs come out, people can't get them back in, and they're like, oh, whatever, just chuck it, and then that's it, So I think, cool project around flip-flops could be good.
Yeah, it's quite a design flaw, really, when you think about it. It definitely should be. There's definitely something we can do there. Or maybe when we're eventually allowed to travel again, I can come and rescue all the flip-flops and we can do a project together.
That would be incredible. And are you seeing much... you mentioned it's a design flaw, and the fact that brands who are producing millions upon millions of pairs of shoes, which are ultimately doing bad for the environment. Are you seeing now brands sort of looking a bit deeper into the types of work you're doing, and we're like managing their waste or looking at ways to become more sustainable? Are you seeing, like, especially since you started over 5 years ago, are you seeing much change between when you started upcycling 5 years ago up until now with brands wanting to make changes?
Yeah, definitely. I think it's been a really interesting progression because I think when I first sort of emerged in 2016 and sort of showed my collection, I really didn't know what people were going to think of it. If people were going to, I just sort of had this burning desire to do it, and then I just presented it and sort of wanted to see what happened. But I think people at the beginning were very sort of anti the idea, oh, people aren't going to want to wear something that's obviously secondhand or that's somebody else's shoes, you know, and all those sort of things. And then I think people started to, the first thing that took off was the aesthetic. So everybody suddenly jumped on the bandwagon of that deconstructed aesthetic, which was a issue within itself because people were taking the aesthetic value of what I was doing, but n completely disregarding the concept. And then making, you know, thousands and millions of pairs of sneakers with this deconstructed aesthetic, but then just still mass producing them and not giving anything a second thought. So when that sort of kicked off around, you know, 2017, it was really hard for me because I really was conflicted. I was like, I made this idea to change people's mindset, and it's just been picked up as a trend. But I think as that's progressed into where we are now, I think, you know, I haven't sort of given up on the idea, and I've kept sort of championing this idea of waste materials and secondhand sneakers. And I think it sort of leaves people to feel accountable for what they're making. And I think the bigger following I get, and also there's a community of us, you know, on Instagram specifically, all these like upcyclists and makers and people that are sort of challenging waste material and saying, look, I can do this with my old stuff or whatever. And I think that that's giving brands no option but to do the same, either by collaborating with us or by trying to do something themselves. But I hope that it encourages more collaborations, and I have found myself that like I have had more brand collaborations, which is good because I think when I can work directly with a brand and share my vision is much more useful than them just taking what they think my vision is or taking like my aesthetic from Instagram or do you know what I mean? So I think over the years that progression has definitely changed from like just lifting things to actually investigating the ideas more, which is good, I guess.
Yeah, it's funny, isn't it, how people just they kind of miss the point. They just grab the aesthetic and then, you know, not understanding the sort of like ethos behind what it is. It's like you're instigating change and you're doing things for the right reasons, and then brands just go, okay, I'll take that, and then try and do something, and it's completely missing the point of what it is you're doing, you know. And so what collaborations are you doing then? Are you working on anything at the moment, or?
So I've had some brand collaborations in the past, which has been really good. And I think as I go through this process as well, and I learn more about myself, and also sort of learn to stick up for myself a bit more, you know, it's just me in the studio on my own, like making these ideas. I have a amazing assistant now, Matthew, that started working with me. But before that, you know, it was just me. So I think as I've gone through these brand collaborations, I've started to think, no, I'm not gonna stand for that, or I need to put my foot down a bit more with that because I don't just want to be sort of taken around brands as a, almost like, oh, look, we're working with Helen, so we must be great. So I think I started to realize that, and now I'm making sure that collaborations that I do are really meaningful, and I have had some really good ones. And yeah, I have got a one on that's coming out next year, which I can't wait for it to come out. It's been a long time coming with everything that's happened this year. But also this year, it's kind of given me a chance to focus on what I'm doing personally as a brand and like what I'm bringing from my own side without the collaborations, and also to think about collaborating with smaller brands and people, artists, and also people that I admire and I care about. So earlier in the year, I did a collaboration with Bethany Williams, who makes amazing clothes, and she's just an incredible person and part of our sort of sustainability crew in London, which is great. And you know, working with people like that, that you share a similar mindset to, and you believe in their process, I think is so rewarding. And those sort of projects are definitely ones that I want to push further, hopefully next year, if everything gets a bit back to normal.
Yeah, and I guess that's the whole thing with collaborations. It's kind of, that's what collaboration should be about, right? There's a meaningful purpose to why two people are coming together and complementing each other and creating something that you couldn't do without the other. And I guess the attraction of working with big brands is it's kind of, I guess people are using it more as a platform to try and get their name out there. And it's kind of, it's turned into a marketing thing, I think, a lot with these bigger brands. They're like, you know, like what you're saying, it's okay, well, we need to be look like we're doing something meaningful. Let's just get Helen in and take that box. And ultimately, that shouldn't be the goal of, you know, if they're serious about it, they should try and implement something and have a bit of a goal that they want to reach, and then bring you in to really kind of like collaborate deeply on that, on those systems, you know, rethinking how they, what they're doing with their waste, and look at it as a long-term thing and not just some short-term box ticking sort of thing, you know?
Yeah, and I think that's the thing as well. And that's something, especially all us sort of young designers that are working in sustainability and sort of changing attitudes and mindsets towards products in the fashion system in general. I think we started to become more aware of that and to realize that the value that we bring is massive. And I think that's, it's hard to see that sometimes, because, you know, exactly like you said, you know, you get these approached by these people and you're like, oh, amazing, that'll boost my followers, or that'll do this, or that'll do that. But if you want to keep the integrity of what you're actually trying to do, then it can be quite tricky to navigate that and to work out, you know, how to grow whilst keeping that sort of authenticity and making sure that your message and the thing that you believe in doesn't get lost along the way, really.
Yeah, it's so important. Absolutely. And in terms of what you're doing then, because it is, you know, by nature, a small scale operation, you're making everything by, you know, by yourself in your studio, one-off pieces. Is that for you something you can sustain financially? Like, is it something you feel you'd like to grow slightly, like, I wouldn't say scale up huge, but are you looking at ways of expanding this?
It's interesting, because when I first started in, so when I graduated from RCA, I actually worked at Adidas for a year. And then I, after a year, I decided to leave and come back and set up the studio because of, you know, wanting to take ownership of this idea. And then when I kind of set up the studio, I almost said to myself, oh, I'll give it a year and see what happens. Didn't really have a plan, didn't really have much money, was just sort of like going for it. And then after a year, I was like, right, okay, I'll give it another year because it's still sort of working. So then I did it. And then that took me to sort of the beginning of last year. And I was like, right, okay, this is actually my business. This isn't just me faffing around making a shoe. So I think this year specifically has been a real transition period into me thinking, okay, if this is going to be my legacy and this is what I'm bringing to the world, and, you know, just thinking a bit more about what are my goals, like what are those things that I want to achieve, and how am I going to get there. So I think, yeah, I've started to think differently about it now, whereas before I was really against scaling up in terms of, like, you know, mass producing things or anything like that, which I still don't want to do, but more thinking alternative ways of making the products more accessible, or making more people be able to be inspired or influenced by what I'm doing, if it's through, you know, talks and workshops, or just different ways to build the business rather than just you know, making the made to orders, because made to order takes me about a week of time to do one pair, so it's very time consuming, and also takes so much creative juice to be able to do it that you feel sort of exhausted after doing one. So I think although it's the crux of the business and I definitely want to keep it going, I'm sort of I'm starting to think now about other ways that I can expand and just share it with people, really, because exactly like you said earlier, you know, this idea of open source and this idea of inspiring people to help themselves or to take ownership themselves, I think is the way forward. And I think the idea of self-worth and sort of, you know, it just doesn't make sense to me to just grow a brand for the sake of growing it.
Does that
makes I know it sounds
Hey,
strange,
no,
but I mean,
that makes complete sense. Yeah, I mean, with what you're doing, it's purpose driven. You're not just making it just to make money. You're doing this because there's a meaning and a purpose behind what you're doing. You're trying to implement change. You're kind of like, there's a big problem with waste, not just in footwear, but within the whole world of this sort of like culture we're in of like everything is just throwaway. As you said before, it's cheaper to buy something new than to replace or to repair what you already have, which is a disaster, really. And right now, the world is at breaking point, and we need to really make changes. And I think you're one of the few people that are really, for me, sort of creating that impact where I can see this really taking off. Like, because, like, one thing, sneakers are, there's just something about sneakers that people are just really, as you mentioned, almost like emotionally attached to. And the stories and the narratives that come with people remembering what the sneakers that they had when they're younger, or those sort of like moments, and then the fact that you're sort of taking all of these different sort of memories and different eras and sort of deconstructing them, put them into something new, and going, look how beautiful this is, and it's made from waste. And I think it's very, very inspiring, you know. So yeah, I think it's kind of to be scared of scaling that up, I think is. I know. I would be proud of that. I think if you could scale that up, then what an achievement! Because how much the legacy of, doing your part and help saving the planet would be huge, you know. Because landfills and throwing things away into the oceans, it's a big problem. So the more people that can do this, if everybody did it would be amazing, right?
Yeah, it would be good, wouldn't it? Yeah, I think that's the thing as well. I think it's just those stories and that, I think that connection is what sort of drives me. And I'm always I'm inspired by people, you know, and people's stories. And I think that that maybe sets apart like what I'm doing to other customizers or people that are working for, you know, that are inspired particularly by the products or by the sort of franchises and the brands and that sort of thing. Like none of that is, not that it's not relevant, but it's not the thing that's driving me. And yeah, one of the made to order services that I do, people can actually send me their old sneakers. So people can send, I say up to six pairs of their old sneakers, and then I'll remake them into one pair of shoes for them. So people have sent me like their first ever basketball shoes or their shoes they wore to the prom or like all these different elements that of shoes that, you know, you might buy for one occasion or you might wear or you grew out of them or those sort of things. And then I can take little pieces of them and like rework them into a new sneaker for somebody to wear. And I just think that is a lot of pressure, because you have to really pay homage to their story, but it's also an amazing thing to see when they open the box and they have all those memories in their new product. So it's really nice.
That's incredible. Yeah, and that sentimental value that people have. I wonder what it is about sneakers that people, I wonder if there's like a science behind it to why we do have such a big thing with sneakers and compared to like a t-shirt or a jacket or whatever. And yeah, I wonder what it is about sneakers that we get really emotionally attached to. Is it just this kind of the fact that we walk on our feet and this, or is it just an aesthetic? I don't know. Is that something you've looked into, why people are so emotionally attached to these objects?
Yeah, it's something I'd love to explore more. And I do think, even though it sounds obvious, I do actually think that idea of walking and like a physical journey, it is a part of the attachment. And I think like with your shoes, I don't know, like I have a pair of Adidas Sambas that have got a suede toe, and the toe's got a mark on from where I spilt a Sambuca shot on the toe when I was like 18. And I think those sort of memories that I think because if people really do wear their shoes and, you know, enjoy wearing them and aren't too precious about them, you don't think about it. It's just there. And then you notice like, oh, that scuff was from a gig, or that was from when somebody, you know, spilled a drink on me or whatever it is. And then you have and even the outsole, you know, the way you walk is impressioning your body and your movement into the grain of the tread. So I think that even those sort of things are, it just becomes a really personal object. And I think that Also, a sneaker is like, it's small, it's an object. It's like this thing that you don't quite understand. It's not like a t-shirt or something that seems more more accessible, I guess. Like, I think sneakers, especially in culture as well, have always been built up to be this sort of grand thing that people aspire to own or aspire to have, or it's connected a lot to culture and music. And I think that those reasons as well make it a lot more powerful, I guess. But yeah, it is so interesting. I'd love to know more about it. And I think I was really surprised in a way when I first realized that people wouldn't give me their shoes. I was like, oh, come on, it's just your shoes. And then I realized I was asking everyone else for their shoes, and I wasn't taking mine. And I was like, if I'm not even going to cut up my own shoes, how could I expect that anyone else would let me cut up theirs? And you know, I have like old Converse from that I used to draw on, or people would write messages on. And I think I've always just had that connection with products and just personalizing stuff. And I think I guess I'm doing that on a bigger scale.
Yeah, it's very interesting. And I always, you know, like when you see someone, I always remember at school, you'd always sort of like, people, I wouldn't say judge people, but you'd sort of like get an impression of what someone was like by the sneakers they were wearing. You know, it's kind of got this real expression of, you can almost tell what he or she likes because of the shoes she's wearing. And then, as you mentioned, it's so connected with culture, like music cultures. And in the 80s, you had the Adidas kind of terrace culture. And in the 90s, you had, you know, different things with Nike. And yeah, I guess it's sort of like an identity, isn't it? Like, these are the shoes I wear because I'm part of this type of, I don't know, belonging somewhere, or a scene, or a movement, yeah, or something. So I guess maybe that's what it might be. Yeah, it's an interesting thing to think about.
I think it's all of those things mixed together. And I think people have, it's just one of those objects that can, people can relate to it for so many different reasons. So whether it is through, like you said, like those cultural references, through something to do with the brand that's always been like an aspirational brand to with sneakers, I think it can be all of those things. It can be, you know, it's aspirational. It could be an aspirational brand. It could be something to do with a sort of cultural figure or celebrity that's like endorsed something. So I think there's just always so many versions of why people can be connected to it, which is more than other items of clothing, I guess.
Absolutely. And you mentioned earlier about sharing things. And if somebody does want to do this, like for themselves at home, did you say you have some workshops online that maybe people can access?
Yeah, so I'm hoping to do more next year. I've done a couple of ones during lockdown, you know, on Instagram Live and things like that. But I haven't done any that are that exist that people can look back at. But I do sort of I do them occasionally on Instagram Live, and I'm hoping that next year maybe to do a sort of series, so there's a bit more something that, you know, is more accessible to people. But but yeah, I think the best thing to do if people are interested in working with their products that they own is just to have a go. I think I always just encourage people to just, you know, if you've got an old pair of shoes that you don't mind or you're going to throw away that you want to do something with, just have a go, you know, take a scalpel to it and cut a bit off and see what happens. I think it's sneakers are pretty robust and pretty hardy, so you can go for it and it's not going to you know, it's not going to fall apart straight away, even if you know, cut a few of the pieces off, like the reinforcements, or if you move something to somewhere else. Or another thing, you know, is even just thinking of things like changing the laces or painting on them, or those sort of easy fixes are always fun to try and do as well. But I think just have a go is what I always say, because and I think there's, you know, on my Instagram you can see the sort of things that I've done, so maybe people can find a bit of inspiration there.
Just on a final note, just any advice on young designers, maybe that are coming through today, or future generations that are kind of wanting to make impact and some, you know, creating positive products? Have you got any advice on people just starting out today?
Yeah, I think one of the the most important things that I've sort of realized recently is to make sure you know what your purpose is for doing what you're doing, like, and then you can focus in better on what you're trying to achieve. And I think as well as that, I remember at uni, people always used to say to me, oh, build a network. And I was like, what is a network? I don't understand. What does that mean? And I think that it's essentially just your friends and like anybody that you're interested in, anybody that you are inspired by. It's so easy to connect with people now, especially through Instagram. You know, I try and reply to people's DMs when I can, and I try and but even if it's not a DM, even if it's just being present on someone's social feed, like where you comment or you always like things, you'll be surprised and on how that people can remember that. I've been in situations before where I've met students and then we get onto the subject of Instagram and they'll tell me like their Instagram handle and I'd say like, oh, you always comment on my posts or something. And it's just, it connects you then to somebody. And then I'm having a conversation with her over the rest of the group. So I think it's be a bit brave and be a bit cheeky on how you might want to reach out to people. And if you're inspired by people, just tell them, because I think you as an artist yourself or a designer yourself, you know, that it's important and it's great to get feedback from people and people to tell you that they like what you do. And so just be friendly and be enthusiastic about people's work and about your own work. And I think it's the best way to start to build a network and start to build a sort of community around what you're doing. I believe in being a nice person and being, you know, sending out good energy into the world.
Amazing. Well, you're doing a great job at sending out good energy. And the work you're doing is super important and, you know, never more than in today's world. So keep it up. We're huge fans of you here in Bali. And we'd definitely love to work on some projects together. So hopefully once this whole pandemic, if it ever calms down, we can come over and we can tackle the flip-flops and sneakers, which I've also seen in the ocean and in the rivers here. So, yeah, it'll be great to do that in the future.
Yeah, I would love to. That would be amazing. It was so nice to chat to you. I'm glad we managed to.
Oh, yeah, thanks so much. I really appreciate you taking the time. It's been great to connect. And we'll keep in touch and hopefully see you soon.
Amazing. Thanks so much. Yeah. I'll speak to you soon.
Thank you. Bye-bye.